Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Yesterday's show received an avalanche of texts that continued to come in overnight about A and E waiting times. We heard on the show from Quiva, who had her father waiting for more than 24 hours. I'll play you a clip of that just so you can get a feel for her story.
It was last Friday. I got a call when I was here in work and my brother said, look, Dad was at the GP. He wasn't happy with whatever test they did. And they just said, as precaution, you may go into A&E. He got in there at around 1 o'clock. My brother got him lunch and off he went. And then I went over to him at around 9 o'clock thinking, right, by the time I get there now, he might have been seen or be ready to go home. I brought him in a bit of food and then I said, okay, sure, I'll wait. Because what else would you do? 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. And at this stage, like he's not alone. The place is packed. Like it's full to the brim. It's like a zoo. There's drunk guys coming in, falling on top of sick people. There's security guards there. They're trying to manage it. First of all, there was water, but there was no cups. So people were sitting there like if they wanted a drink, they couldn't get a drink. There's nowhere to get food at this stage. So like if you don't have your daughter like me or your brother or your sister or any family member to come in and give you something, you're sitting in A&E for 16 hours with no food, no water. Now, there's a vending machine. You can get a chocolate bar. There was one guy who my dad had said had been there, came in around the same time as him. He was in very bad pain. He was bowled over. He was lying on the ground trying to sleep. His wife was with him. Every now and again, he'd get up and he'd get sick into a bag. All the time I was there, nobody came out and checked him. Nobody looked at him. Everyone was just left. He wouldn't leave an animal like that for one of the richest countries in the world. Like, I'm actually so angry about it.
Wow, and rightly so. And I think it's worth saying from the outset that this is a system that isn't working for anybody. I mean, the stress that must cause to the medical staff who are trying to do their best, whether it be a supply or demand situation, that's not working for anyone within it. And we'd like to hear from your experience. Have you been to A&E recently, either yourself or a loved one? Get in touch with us, 087 1400 106 or email lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. Here's just some of a flavour of what came in even after the show yesterday. My dad was in A&E about 9 or 10 weeks ago. He was in a car crash and he was fine, but he was a bit shaken. We were there for about 13 hours. We were in and out on the phone and to the loo, etc. I said to a nurse at one stage that my dad is here since 1 p.m. It's now 9 p.m. and nobody has given them anything to eat or drink. I thought they were not giving any food because they were going to do some tests on him. But no, the nurse said, oh, yeah, a person was around with the trolley. Did your dad not hear the trolley going around? Now, my dad is 82. His hearing is not great. With that, maybe the nurse might try and organise to get him a cup of tea. It was then at that stage, 12 midnight. Another says, we were waiting to see the doctor, waiting and waiting. Eventually he came and he said that my dad was going home. So this was great and we thought we'd get him something to eat at home. The doctor came back to us at 1:30 and said, no, we're going to keep him in. At this stage, we were frantic as there was nothing in the vending machine. He's a diabetic. He knew that. It ended up that I had to beg, please, please, could you get him a cup of tea and something to eat? And eventually they got him an egg sandwich and a cup of tea. Another says, we stayed in the hospital. So we stayed in the hospital for 2 weeks. They diagnosed him through tests with stage 4 cancer, which we never knew. They told us he needs to have a PET scan done and how severe his diagnosis was. And they still hadn't found the primary source of the cancer. But he had lesions on his lungs. He had secondary cancer. So he had a PET scan done. It's now almost 8 weeks later. We still have no results. We've rang and rang the doctors and the hospital and nothing. The doctor said ring the hospital. So after 2 weeks after emailing, the doctor's surgery called me to say they finally got through to the department and the doctors haven't even signed the discharge papers for my dad. And he was 7 weeks out of hospital at this stage. We still have no results. The doctor said it would only be 1 week, maximum 10 days. My dad, as I said, is stage 4 cancer and we have lost 2 months of a treatment plan or pain management because of the negligence of the hospital. To say I'm furious is putting it lightly. If it was the doctor's father, he would have known his results within a week. If it had been a politician's father, they would have known within a week. But because it's my quiet, soft, gentle dad that stays in the background and is not able to speak up for himself or is not established enough, to have the care and courtesy of having his results. It's funny that the doctor and his team in the hospital know my dad's full diagnosis and his own family doesn't. Another, I waited in A&E for 26 hours with kidney stones, was in horrific pain. By the time I got seen, I'd passed them. My daughter broke her leg at the age of 3. She received a letter for her checkup the other day. She's now 8. No apology, zilch. It's not acceptable. And perhaps one more. 2 years ago, my husband presented with symptoms of a stroke to a hospital Tuesday evening in the east of the country. He was given a trolley and a cubicle in A&E after being assessed to be deemed not in danger. I arrived to the hospital the following morning to point to the doctor doing rounds and point out that my husband's mouth was slightly drooping. He eventually got a bed on the Wednesday night very late. He was moved to a stroke ward on the Friday and didn't see a consultant until the Tuesday due to it being a bank holiday. We have private health insurance, but with a stroke, it's important to get to the nearest hospital. It's the system and some of the staff also. A&E and hospitals in this country are a disaster. Wow. Well, let us know your opinions and your stories. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number for free, or you can email lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. Kira is with me on the line. Kira, you had a similar experience while in A&E. Can you tell us about it?
Hi, Claire. Yes, I can. My dad became unwell on the 5th of January, woke up on a Monday morning, just didn't feel great. And to put it in perspective, yes, he was 83 years of age, but he'd never been sick a day in his life. He was strong, healthy, mentally and physically. He just didn't feel well, so he slept it off and then woke up the next day on the 6th of January and didn't feel any better. So Mum went to get him a prescription, and when she came back, he had collapsed in the sitting room. And she called an ambulance, and the ambulance came. The first responder said, look, and Dad was perfectly alert. He'd come around at this stage, and we'd all gathered, and he was like, I'm fine. And Mum said, no, you need to, you know, you need to be seen. So the first responder called and he checked him over and he said, look, he seems fine. His vitals are good, but there's something brewing. His temperature isn't, you know, where we'd like it to be. So we're going to bring him in. And my dad begged and pleaded. He said, please don't bring me into Limerick. And my mom said, you know, is there any way he can go to Galway? And the first responder said, no, we're Limerick only. So fast forward, he was brought to A&E in an ambulance at 7 p.m. I went in around 10 p.m. and relieved my sister and my mother, and I spent the night sitting beside him on the trolley. Now, there's two sides to this, I suppose. There's the experience of A&E and then what happened afterwards, but I know this is, I want to focus particularly on the A&E experience. So I was with Dad until 10 a.m. and the next morning, and he slept, woke. So I had a lot of time, I suppose, to, you know, people watch and watch the dynamics and watch what was going on around me. And it was just, it was horrendous, Claire. I mean, I can't even describe what I saw. It was like sitting in a hospital in a third world country. I couldn't believe it. And I suppose I'm speaking particularly on behalf of the elderly and the vulnerable, the quiet ones, the ones that can't speak up for themselves. If you don't have anybody to advocate for them, they're finished. They're screwed. Dad was lucky. He had one of us there all the time. And we were able to get him a drink of water. I had to stop several healthcare assistants to help me bring him to the toilet because he couldn't walk. There was people on trolleys around us that had nobody there with them, just asking for water. One man had fallen and cracked his hip and just wanted paracetamol, and there was one nurse between all of the trolleys, and I'd say she was straight out of college. God love her. No help, no one came to help her. She asked for help, she said she couldn't cope, nobody came. So I was going in and out behind the nurse's station and getting drinks of water for people. I was helping the elderly people off their trolleys and into the toilet. The toilets were disgraceful. They were filthy. The vending machine was empty. I couldn't get a cup of coffee. Eventually, when the catering staff came around in the morning around 8 a.m, they were offering tea and coffee and something for the patients, for the people on the trolley. And a lady who was with her mother, who was on a trolley, said, could I get a cup of tea? I've been here all night. And the catering staff said, no, sorry, we can't. And I said, give her my dad's cup of tea. He doesn't want it. She's asleep and I wanted to leave him asleep. Like, that's just, it was just horrific. And I remember looking at Caoimhe's Instagram yesterday and it really triggered me. I thought Limerick was the only place that was as bad as that, but it seems it's countrywide. I don't know what's going on, but I know that throwing more money at the system is not the answer. I know that the basics are missing. Forget about nurses and doctors and what they do. The basics are missing. Basic humanity is missing. They're just lying there. Nobody's saying hello to them. Nobody asking them their name, if they want anything. Just giving them a bit of comfort.
Yeah. And Ciara, do hear from people saying, I wouldn't go to A&E, sure, who wants to lie around on a trolley? So you think about the people that are, like your own dad didn't necessarily want to go. And that's worrying. You're right to speak up for the vulnerable, you know, the older generation or indeed the sick. Anyone who presents to A&E is, of course, vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But what did you see of the staff? Did they just look like they were pushed to the max?
Oh, absolutely. And I had varying experiences. I had one kind of older nurse, and you can't move a trolley without a healthcare assistant. So a nurse can't bring a man to have a procedure like an MRI or whatever without a porter or a HCA. And she just got fed up with it. At 3 in the morning, my father needed to go for an MRI and because he didn't know what was wrong. And she just said, I'm taking him on my own. This is ridiculous, because they were ringing the porter station and nobody was answering. They were all probably so busy. So I went with her. The healthcare assistants were just run ragged. I stopped one young man at one stage and I said, please, can you help me get my dad? And he was looking at his watch and he was like having a nervous breakdown. He was so busy.
Yeah. So as I said, it's a system that isn't working for anybody. Ciara, can I ask you how your dad is doing now?
My dad passed away, Claire, in ICU 3.5 weeks later.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ciara.
Yeah, thank you. I can't say that anything that happened in A&E was the result of that.
Yeah.
I'm not speaking about my dad. My dad had us. He had us advocating. Now, his circumstances were terrible as well. Like the trolley was uncomfortable. He had a pain in his back. He had a pain in his neck. He was a bit delirious. He was thirsty, you know. So, but we were there. So, you know, we were fine. It was everybody else. It was people that had nobody. I just wanted to speak about one woman. She came in her 80s, tiny little, gorgeous little woman. She was beautiful and full of life. And she came in on a trolley and she was sitting there, but she was pottering around saying hello to everyone and chatting. And I said, what are you here for? And she said, oh, I had a nosebleed. And I said, what? And she said, I had a nosebleed. And I rang Shannon Doc and they told me to come in. And the doctor came around at 9 o'clock in the morning and he said, what are you doing here? And she said, I don't know, Shannon Doc sent me in. So you have before even A&E, you have a system where Shannon Doc, GPs, paramedics, first responders just have no other alternative to be on the safe side than to send these people.
Yeah, we need a complete overhaul, as you say. Ciara, I'm sorry again about your dad. And, you know, even as you say, if that was the opening of his final chapter, you would have preferred it to be a little bit easier and a little bit more gentle. But it sounds like you were by his side all the way and nothing will ever change that. Thank you so much for talking to us today. Ciara there, whose dad had a tough time in A&E, as did she, as did the staff, as did plenty of vulnerable people that she saw around her. A texter says, it puzzles me how the country comes to a standstill over 30 cent on the price of a litre of fuel, but no protests about the 24 hours or more waiting in a hospital. Surely if we call a protest, the government will need to at least start addressing it. Well, I have Dr. Chris Luke on the line with me now. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Claire.
I do think it's really important that in this, as I said to Ciara, not only do we represent the vulnerable, the patients, the people presenting to A&E, but also those working within it. It's an ongoing issue for many years. Is this just the way accident and emergency is? Will it ever change?
Well, I'd hate to say that it'll never change, and I remain eternally optimistic, but listening to those stories from the poor people who are subjected to basically a kind of purgatory or a torture chamber, in various emergency departments would really make you feel very disconsolate. Look, you know, there are obviously routes to the problem, and therefore there are solutions available, and we basically know what they are. I mean, just to put it simplistically, in the 1980s, there was a very severe economic situation in the country, and that persisted until the early 1990s. And during that time, two ministers for health basically cut the number of beds in our hospitals by about a third. Meanwhile, the Celtic Tiger arrived in the mid to late 1990s, and our population began to surge. So in 2026, we have fewer beds than we had 40 years ago, but we have almost doubled our population from around about 2.9 million in 1960-ish to around about 5.4 million people-ish now in the Republic. And that ultimately is the metric you're dealing with. So the hospitals are overwhelmed because they have nowhere to put the growing number of patients. And in addition to the number, the sheer numbers in terms of demography, we also have an aging population, as we keep hearing. Mm-hmm. And that means that the diagnoses are far more complex than they ever were before. And we're also, I suppose, able to do far more. So people do not come in now and have one simple test, one X-ray or one medical opinion. There's so many more tests that they can possibly have. And I suppose in a risk-averse climate, they are subjected to far more tests than they used to be. And then you have a situation where the doctors in the hospital, the clerical staff, are overwhelmed by the number of results. And in that case of that poor man with the PET scan and so on, they're waiting weeks and weeks for the tests to be signed off. So we know what's wrong here. And it's comparable, I suppose, to the homeless situation. I mean, Brendan Kelly, the professor of psychiatry, who's an eminent authority on all matters mental illness in Ireland, pointed out in one of his recent books that in 1962, there were about 22,000 people in our mental hospitals. And when the hospitals were closed abruptly, basically, in the early 70s, most of those people were sent to so-called community care. And community care basically means they ended up homeless. And the same thing happened politically in the 1980s and 90s. We were told that the hospital beds wouldn't be removed until there were alternative provisions made in terms of follow-up beds and community beds. They never arrived. And that basically is the cause of the problem.
And Chris, aside from that, and not to minimise those changes that drastically need to be made, they're not an overnight fix. So in the meantime, what about the lack of humanity that Ciara touched on, that there's nobody getting a cup of tea, there's nobody giving a point of contact? I mean, we have AI now, for God's sake. Can they not send an email with results? I know people might say that's heartless, but so is waiting for weeks on end with a father with stage 4 cancer. I mean, surely there's things we can do in the meantime.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I've been ranting, I'm afraid I'm going to use the word ranting, because I've been raving into the void for 40 years next nigh or near, to make people aware, the powers that be aware of the situation here. And I've certainly outlined many, many solutions over the years in terms of scribblings and so forth. And for example, I have for at least 10 years suggested that every hospital in the state that has an emergency department should have a Francis Brennan equivalent. In other words, somebody with expertise and seniority who can look after all the people before they get into the medical part of the department. And that means chairs, pillows, water, phone chargers, sandwiches, and far more frequent caterers going around with trolleys and making sure that people are looked after. Because as far as I'm concerned, what we've heard in the last 20 minutes describes a system that has completely collapsed in terms of humanity. And not only has it collapsed in terms of humanity, but we know that between 400 and 1,200 people die in this state as a result of the overcrowding because of the delays in getting to definitive care, definitive surgery, definitive investigations and so on. So basically, this is a system that's completely overwhelmed. And I've never been able to understand why they can't do what, for example, they do in Belgium, which is to build modular bits of, they build hospitals like Lego buildings.
Yeah, yeah, like even prefab structures just to deal with this.
They're quite elegant.
Yeah, and they can build them quickly. Yeah,
and they add on a bit every 2 or 3 years.
Well, look, Chris, we'd be going into a whole other conversation if we talk about how long it takes to build a hospital in this country. But really appreciate you coming on and what you had to share there. We'd love to hear from you on this. You can text 53106 at a cost of 30 cents. You can WhatsApp us for free, 087 1400 106. Or you can email us lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. A texter says, my dad is 69, was diagnosed with esophageal cancer. Camera test 8 weeks ago marked as urgent. Still waiting to sit in front of an oncologist and a team with a treatment plan. Dad is literally dying in front of us, down to 7 stone and 4 different hospitals. And trying to get someone to even answer the phone is a nightmare. All paperwork and no action. By the way, I'm a nurse of 25 plus years and I cannot even get anywhere with the service. Frustrated from the West. Well, I send you and your dad and all your family all the very best. That is just hell that people are living in. In 2023, my father, 88, was taken from a nursing home to hospital at 2:30 p.m. I got to the hospital from Dublin around 6 p.m. He was on a trolley in a corridor. He was in a draft, and we had asked for a screen and more blankets. I stayed with him until 4 a.m. The nursing home had sent him in with no pad. He soiled himself shortly before we, my wife and I, left. I was in work at 7 a.m. I asked for him to be cleaned a few times and was told he was going to be put into a room in a few minutes and would be cleaned then. My mother and sister arrived at 10 a.m. He was still in the corridor uncleaned. I can't tell you the feeling I had when I heard this. His treatment in A&E was terrible. When he was admitted, he was cared for and it was very good. I will acknowledge that. And that's from Daniel. Well, Daniel, thank you for finding any silver lining among all of that, because humanity is hugely missing there. And there are memories flooding back to me from my now deceased dad and his experience in hospital. And there are many correlations between everything that is coming in by text. Literally, the texts are still flying in. It's almost impossible to keep up with them, but we are reading them all. We are taking them all in. And I want to get to some of them. In A&E, I had to take my non-verbal adult intellectually disabled daughter who cannot understand why needles are being stuck into her. She pulls out drips and tubes. I asked for help supplies to wrap her arm. She was screaming as she thought she was being attacked. I was told, oh, we don't have anything like that. Staff had absolutely no interest in any help that I asked for. A&E in triage was an absolutely horrific experience. She was on a trolley like this, screaming for 5 hours with me trying to hold her arms down so that she wouldn't pull out her drips and blood. Eventually, she was sedated. This is just wrong. There was nothing that she could eat. I was shocked, to be honest. This was in a large Dublin hospital. Yvonne says, my father-in-law was 3 days in A&E on a chair for most of it before they found a bed in St. Vincent's for him. He was very sick. This was in January and he's still in hospital today. So this is pretty sick. And he spent 3 days in A&E. We've also been getting voice notes. A listener has got in touch with this story.
I had to go into a private hospital last year and I was told that it would cost probably €300. I had private medical insurance, so I was quite willing to pay that money because it was just a bit of concern over my heart. When I went in, I was able to pick a time that I went in. I think I got there at 3:30 and I was there till nearly 12 o'clock at night. But interestingly enough, within 5 minutes, they had asked me for my card and they had took €800 off me. That was to pay for the bloods that I had to have done to see the cardiologist. And then it was late at night, so I had to go back in a second day to actually have the stress test done. Now, thankfully, everything worked out fine for me. But the point I'm making on that one is that even being in the private sector, I had to wait nearly 8 hours. The more concerning thing that I wanted to talk about was recently my dad, who's 88 years of age, had to go to see his consultant in a public hospital. It was a urology situation. And when he went in, the doctor asked him, how are you getting on your chemotherapy? Of course, my father stuck to the chair because he hadn't a clue what he was talking about. The doctor then went on to say, so you realise you have a tumour on your kidney? And my dad said, absolutely not. I knew nothing about this. Did your doctor or did the hospital not talk to you about this? He said, no. So then they asked him his name and address again. The doctor went out. My dad was left there kind of very kind of distressed. And they came back in and they said, we're really sorry. Your notes are not the correct notes. These notes that were uplifted was for a different patient. Now, we did follow up with his GP And the hospital came back and sent a letter of apology to his GP. But he was left very traumatised. He was told to go home and drink, to hydrate a little bit more and drink more water, because of his age, they weren't going to do anything really with him. But he said he had to go home and have a glass of whiskey. He got such a fright, and it left him very traumatised. And when he was back in a few weeks later, talking to one of the PAs around that area, they kind of were very dismissive to him and said, look, that was dealt with. We told you it was a mistake. So this is not good enough. An old man, 88 years of age, being told that he had a tumour on his kidneys when he didn't. And you can just imagine how shell-shocked he was. And apart from that, he's still at the back of his head is going, have I? Maybe they're not telling me about it. Does my family know about this? So yeah, it's just not good enough. Our health system is on its knees. And yeah, that's all I wanted to say, guys.
Yeah, and thank you very much for sending that in. And I'm sorry to hear that your dad went through that. And it's good to hear there was an apology letter given out to your GP and that there was some sort of accountability, because mistakes can happen, but that's a pretty huge one. And I think what you've touched on there in that voice note is, can we have faith in the system? Can we have faith that we're going into something that we can trust? And I think that's so important, particularly when it comes to our health and at very tricky times in our life. And, you know, we already mentioned that there are people who are deciding not to go to A&E because they either feel like they could be too sick or just not able to sit for 3 days on a trolley and wonder when they'll be seen. And that's not a health system anyone would want. One texter says, 2 years ago, my husband presented with symptoms of a stroke to a hospital on a Tuesday evening in the east of the country. He was given a trolley in a cubicle in A&E after being assessed and deemed not to be there in danger. I arrived the next morning and he was just left on a trolley for days on end. This is not acceptable. It's the system, but it's also some of the people working within it. It needs a complete overhaul. We have another listener who got in touch with a voice note.
My 67-year-old partner was in hospital just before Christmas in A&E. He was in it for almost a full, well, from 4 o'clock in the day till I think it was 6 or 7 the next morning when he got a bed. He had pneumonia. He has a life-threatening illness called amyloidosis. He was left sitting on a hard chair. He has neuropathy. He has so many other things going on. Now, he's only 67, which is a relatively young man, and he's a very strong man who had been in hospital for 9 months and never complained, but this broke him. He literally cried because he said he couldn't bear the pain any longer. I pleaded with him to try and get him a bed somewhere or something, even a more comfortable chair, but no. So I ended up having to get a footstool, putting it at his feet and raising his feet because his feet are very swollen, so his feet should have been raised, and that was the best they could do. I would like to say this situation is new, but unfortunately 16 years ago my deceased husband was in A&E with cancer. He had been brought in after some of his treatment had gone a bit skew ways, and I had to bring him back in through A&E. He almost died because, as it turned out, at that stage he was only started his treatment, but he was going into renal failure. And only for I rang somebody who I knew that worked in the renal department in another hospital. They said, it sounds like renal failure. Ask one of the doctors to check him immediately. And they did. And he was immediately brought in and given treatment for it. But like, that's 16 years ago. Nothing has changed in 16 years. That's the awful thing about it. I really thought things might have improved, because every election and coming up to it, we hear, oh, big improvements in the hospitals. I mean, like, what hospital? Well, the hospitals are antiquated. The new hospital, we could have built a new country in the length of time it's taken to build it. So it's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And to think that you have to be there with your very sick husband and be ringing people you know for medical advice and organising it yourself. You can keep your thoughts, opinions and stories about A&E coming into us. 53106 at a cost of 30 cent, or WhatsApp us for free, 087 1400 106.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.